Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's stockpiling batteries, food, and fresh water in preparation for Advantage Getting, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. This is the voicemail edition of the podcast, and I'm very excited to welcome back to the show one of the top-tier voicemail guests that you can get. He's really settled into this spot. At the last voicemail show before the finale, give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom!
Now, this spot is non-transferable, right, Rob? It can't be given away to somebody else at the last minute?
That is correct. So, here is Mike Bloom.
I, on the other hand, was a man whore.
Yes!
Snuck in there right at the end. I was wondering if it was going to get mentioned, but I'm happy it did. My past is showing much like, you know, Sarah's past is currently showing on the jury members as they parade one by one into Ponderosa.
All right. So, Mike, thank you for coming on. I think I snuck up on people that you like popped out like Tony out of the Spy Shack, that people weren't expecting you to be on with me already.
Yeah. I mean, you also put in that code for Pro Flowers and got 100 free blooms. So, I mean, we're all in the room here. We're packed to the gills. So if you need to like survey us a la Family Feud for a quick game or something, I have the other 99 blooms here on retainer.
Hashtag bloom in the room, but not actually here with me. You're actually in your house and I'm in my studio. But great to catch up with you, Mike. How's everything been going?
Everything's been going well. You know, I wanted to feel like going into 2017, it was going to be a new year, new bloom. I talked before about how I was trying to take up cooking. I joined a fantasy baseball league.
Yes.
And I very quickly learned that you cannot teach an old bloom new tricks because both of those have gone the way of the dodo very quickly.
Okay, so all of your New Year's resolutions that we talked about during Celebrity Apprentice, they're all gone?
Well, so they're not necessarily gone. I will say in the fantasy baseball front, I am bringing up the rear might heartily. I am a la Cerise standing on the pole trying to figure out if she could climb down or jump down. That's how the place that I'm in comparison to how everyone else is doing. I didn't know this, Rob, but apparently if you don't know anything about baseball, you're not going to be good at fantasy baseball. So.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, I think.
I thought I could like Billy Bean it and say like, all right, if I break down the numbers and, you know, I podcast with an ESPN yeah. guy, there's got to be some sort of osmosis there.
Instead, you osmosis. Billy Garcia it.
Yes, that's the complete opposite. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike Bloom is here with us. And Mike, congratulations on the new gig that you have, which has been announced that you did it a little bit. We had a little bit of a sneak preview a couple of weeks ago, but you're going to be taking over for Josh Wigler on the Parade.com Survivor Beat.
Yes, I am Mixmaster Manwhore Magazine writer Mike Bloom.
Yes. All right, welcome to the big leagues, Mike. You got called up to Survivor Press Corps.
Again, I don't know baseball, so this does not work for me at all.
Congratulations on that, and looking forward to everything that you're going to be doing there coming up in the fall. And it's been a fun week of podcasts, Mike, that Steven and I tried to explain everything on the know-it-alls. Did you feel like that you were able to piece together everything that happened at the tribal council this week?
Well, I think we're definitely going to talk about how I think multiple viewings would necessitate an understanding of that latter tribal council in particular, and possibly how our viewpoints might change. Because, yeah, I was not envious for the second time this season. I had said this to people after the first live show that we did in New York earlier on with the double tribal council where Malcolm went home. There's times when I really don't envy you guys having to do the hot takes right after the moment when things are so confusing and things are so obscure that will be eventually explained. But I think you guys did a great job, and know-it-alls is there to provide off-the-cuff, right-at-the-minute remarks, and I think it filled its duty in that regard.
That one was hard. That one was hard to sort of just like process everything, and I feel like that when I watched it the second time, I felt like that thing slowed down a little bit in terms of it, because you can sort of like, you know where it's going, and then you can see different things that people are saying along the way. But definitely a confusing week. Although, I feel like that the Andrea vote has really been overshadowed.
Yeah, I mean, we can definitely talk. People have said, you know, should these have been two separate episodes in a perfect world? But yeah, I think there are some complications with the Andrea vote as well, where, you know, going back to the very first time they did this type of structure in Survivor Samoa, where it was Dave Ball and then Monica went out. Those were pretty straightforward votes here. And maybe it's because of the circumstances or maybe because of the caliber of player. Things are a little more complicated.
Yeah, I thought the Andrea vote, though, was pretty straightforward.
I mean, I think it seemed like it might have just been like, oh, yeah, you could say on the surface, yes, Suri and Sarah flipped. But I feel like there were things that we learned about, whether through exit interviews or otherwise, about this inner workings of the main alliance of, you know, the Andrea-Aubrey pairing and the Michaela-Suri pairing and, you know, which side Sarah's going to flip with and this new rivalry between Sarah and Andrea that I feel like maybe if this had been a singular episode, could have been drawn out just a little bit. And of course, we could have gotten more Trozan as well.
Yes, of course. Well, there's always room for more Trozan, obviously. I also got to my exit interview with Andrea and Michaela. I thought they were both very fun, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say about Michaela throughout this entire podcast is I think throughout her exit press and even in Ponderosa, you cannot wipe the smile off her face. She is so jovial. She clearly shows a passion for just being there in Survivor, and especially amongst big Survivor legends and other players such as herself, that might not have come across in the edit.
Yeah, why not,
Mike? It's a good question. I mean, the circumstances, I think, sort of provide a reason why you might have a more negative attitude. I mean, she's not the only one to really seem like she's miserable out there. It seems like this season in particular, a lot of people coming out of this season are saying how hard it was out there. And these are returning players, Rob. These are people that have played, you know, upwards of four times in the game. And even then, they're saying that things are really difficult. And that can bring the worst attitudes out of people. There are probably moments that she was a little more jokey that weren't sure. I mean, I feel like even the props are a little jokey. There's a secret scene that I'm sure we're going to talk about. When she does that whole reenactment of what she did with Brad, like, that was hysterical. Mm-hmm. So it's always a big question as to why they show what they show. But I was happy that at least through this other stuff, we got another glimpse of Michaela's personality and really show just, you know, she's at a 10 at all times, but it's not just a negative side of the spectrum.
It's so weird because that she had been such a big personality in all these interviews and things. And even like, I could imagine if it was like, well, she's really fun in real life, but the game really wore her down. But we got to see like sort of like her laughing and joking in secret scenes. And when she's getting voted out of the game, she seems like she's in really good spirits. So it's just weird to me that we didn't get to see more of those character moments on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I would still say they're character moments. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I know, I think you said after your exit interview that you're like, oh yeah, I was really impressed by Michaela's character moments in Millennials versus Gen X, not so in Game Changers. I would actually disagree with you a little bit on that, just because I do feel like we saw a lot of shades of Michaela. Granted, they were a little more negatively oriented, but we also saw more of Michaela in general.
Saw more of her in Millennials versus Gen X.
They about to see some tatas today.
Yeah, that one particular challenge aside, Michaela only went to two tribal councils in her previous season, and so we really didn't get to see her do a lot of gameplay outside those handful of episodes, whereas here we got her for a good 12. Mm-hmm. And so she was much more to the forefront. And again, I still point to these moments, you know, like the props, which are certainly polarizing, but I think everyone can say that they certainly bring some character moments to Michaela's portrayal, no matter what.
And then the other podcast that we've done talking about this episode, I talked with Spencer last night and we got into everything. And I thought we had a fun talk about Sarah, where she is taking lessons from Tony and ultimately if she is in a good position or not to pull this off with the jury. Did you get a chance to listen to Spencer?
I did, right before his graveyard shift.
Yeah, trading Nike.
He did a really nice job. In particular, I really was fascinated by this whole thing about the jury and his takes on jury dynamics, because I agree with you that he has a very interesting perspective in that not only was he on a jury, albeit for only for a couple days, but he also got to stand in front of a jury that shut him out. And so he talked a little bit about, you know, how the jury groupthink might be possible and what exactly goes behind the process of a jury configuration, which I think is apropos considering that we are moving into our finale. And also, for the first time, we're getting to see a lot more into what individual jury members are going to be thinking as well.
We have so much to talk about. Why don't we get into our top story at this hour? Everybody is really just like battening down the hatches, putting boards on the windows to get ready for Advantage Geddon. Are you ready, Mike?
Oh, I'm as prepared as I'm going
to
be.
Ironically, what you need to survive the Advantage Geddon is actually a spy bunker. So if you can just go and dig one out. Tony was ready. That we all laughed at Tony that he was digging out his spy bunker. Just be, Rob, I'm telling you, Advantage Geddon is coming. You need to get underground. It's the only place that's going to be safe.
Yeah, Tony was making that Kool-Aid and we just weren't going to drink it this time.
Yes, yes. We have plenty of Kool-Aid to go around in the Advantage bunker. We have supplies to get us through the next 6 days of the game. We'll be fine.
Yeah, who knew that Tony would really be the Cassandra and not the Big Brother Cassandra or the Survivor Fiji Cassandra, even though Survivor Fiji Cassandra also talks about digging a hole like 20 miles from the highway or something. But he would be the one to really predict the proper safe zone if and when Advantage Geddon should hit. He really was a game changer this season without even realizing it.
Which Cassandra did that?
Cassandra Franklin. I don't know if you remember, but in her opening confessional in Survivor Fiji, she's like, yeah, to get ready for this game, I parked my car on the highway and walked like 20 yards away and decided to hunker down there.
That's a really deep cut reference, Mike.
Paul Ossoff said it was purely for him because that's sure. He's the only person who knows that. So that's just my blatant call out to Paul.
That Tony was like her because he was in the hub of everything.
Oh, boy. Yeah. The less that's said about that push me, pull you orgy-like challenge, the better.
Okay. All right. So here we go. Here's Will from America with concerns about Advantage Geddon.
Hey, Robert and Michael. This is Will, now back in America. With three idols in play and a legacy advantage that has to be played to the final six, all the votes are getting canceled out next week, right? I mean, one person will have individual immunity, and we saw in the preview that Ty gives an idol to Brad. So if Ty, Brad, Troyzan all play their idols, and Sarah has to play her advantage, that means one of Suri or Aubrey are just getting out by default, right? If Aubrey or Suri go home due to this Advantage Geddon, do you think the backlash from fans will be enough to keep Jeff and production from having so many advantages in the game? Also, Haley was robbed.
Okay, Mike.
A few weeks late on that one, Will.
Yes. No, he's still upset about it. So what do you think about this week? Do you think that at this final six, everything gets sort of dumped out on the table?
It's got to be. Even though Ty's idols expire at Ty's and Troyzan's idols expire at five, I think they want to look at if we go three strong into the final five, they're basically set. So they essentially just need to get past this last hurdle of this vote. So I think it makes sense for Ty to sort of pull another three amigos and say, all right, guys, we're going to go in there, a strong blockade, show our idols, and we're going to sit back nice and pretty. Like we said, Sarah has the legacy advantage protecting her as well, which leaves Serene and Aubrey, which from a fan perspective, super disappointing. It stinks to have to lose one of them. My prediction is, I think based on their edit, even though Aubrey got a little bit of a visibility bump this past episode, methinks if there's anyone to suffer from Advantage Geddon, it would probably be her. I mean, it's an interesting question he posits about whether this would sort of deter the producers from putting too many twists in the game. I mean, I'm going to say that I think they're going to roll it back a tiny bit as it was. I think one reason why they put out a multitude of things in the game to begin with is because they really wanted to test these so-called game changers. And I think they also fell into a little bit of a hole or a bunker as it was in that I think they, from a producer's perspective, and again, this is me totally positing, I don't know if this is correct, they would want to think like, I want these to cycle through as much as possible, right? I want, you know, advantages to be played like every three or four rounds so that we get all this wild, chaotic gameplay. But it's smart gameplay for if and when you have an advantage to hold on to it as long as you can, which is why we're at the point that we're at now.
So more idols is good because you potentially have an idol involved in every single tribal council. So we know that there could always be something unpredictable, but we have a lot of people hoarding the idols and getting them to this point. And now we could potentially have a situation where everything just all comes out at once.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I think it's just it's smart gameplay on the player's part. You know, there's reasons why Boston Rob and Kim are two big examples, and Coach, of people who found idols and just sort of held on to them until the end because they didn't really need them. But I think in a producer's perfect world, they would want to say, oh, yeah, let's have, you know, a la Micronesia. Let's have people keep finding idols and now they're not playing them or getting voted out. So I think it just happens in this case that one person found two idols, one person found one idol for one reason or another. I mean, Ty has been so cold-blooded this season, even though he's an animal lover, more chickens than snakes, despite the cold-bloodedness, of, you know, holding on to those idols. As a result, he now is sitting in a really interesting spot in the final six with basically a mountain of idols around him. And now that we have this legacy advantage involved as well, storm's a brewing.
Yeah, storm is brewing. Advantage getting is looming. What about the second part of Will's question? Do you think that there could be a major backlash from the fans if advantage getting does not pan out in a way that people would like it to happen?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I love the Survivor fan community to death, but, you know, someone bats their eyelashes the wrong way sometimes in a confessional, and that could trigger some outrage as well. But I feel like if this does result in a fan favorite like Ceri or Aubrey going, that will definitely say, you know, that will get the robbed G.Otis, you know, buttons trolling across the internet, because it is unfair. It would be unfair for these big players of the game to go out purely because it's a game of musical chairs with advantages, and they just happen to be the ones who didn't find the chair at the right time during the right challenge.
I'm interested to see if that would happen, especially because the two people that you mentioned, they look to be in the worst situation out of anybody that's left in the game. If we were going to do power rankings, I think you'd probably have them sort of like 5-6 in terms of who's the most vulnerable to go home at the next vote. So if they're already most likely to go home, I don't think that either of them, you would say at this point, has the inside track to win. Will people get mad if one of those players gets idled out of the game?
I mean, I would say in terms
advantage get in out of the game.
boy, turn that into a verb now. I would say, going back to your previous statement about who has the inside track to win, it's interesting in that I feel like from the inside the game perspective, like you said, I mean, Ceri is really up the creek without a paddle. Even if she did have a paddle, I don't know if Ceri would be able to paddle her way back to the island. She really is in a precarious position. But again, going back to these jury videos, the jury members seem to really, some are really saying, like, this is Ceri's game to lose. I'm really rooting for her. So if she somehow finds her way to the final three, she has a very, very good chance to win. Aubrey, maybe not so much. So I could totally understand from what you're saying of like, oh, well, this is eventual. They were bound to go out anyway. Sort of like what happened with Kimmy, where, you know, Kimmy decided to take a big swing. She was at the bottom of that foursome alliance going into the final episode. And as a result, whether poetic justice or just happenstance, she was the one that ended up going out due to the two idols getting played in Cambodia.
I guess we'll have to see how this plays out. I mean, it could be epic. I mean, I think that what people are going to maybe be the most mad at is if Ceri or Aubrey get some sort of plan together where they get the votes and it looks like they would have survived this tribal council, and then they ultimately end up losing on this vote because of advantage getting. So I'm sort of saying, I guess, with the first scenario was that they're probably getting voted out anyway, and advantage getting is sort of like doesn't have an effect on that. Everybody just plays a bunch of idols. But let's say, hypothetically, they make a big swing where they're going to knock, you know, Brad or Troy out of the game. They make a new final three deal with Sarah, and it looks like they're going to go to the end and potentially win, and then advantage getting happens. I think people might be upset about that.
Yeah, there could be a certain backlash because you could feel that it would be all for naught. I mean, that being said, we did see in the Cambodia finale after that epic no votes tribal council, I feel like things settled down a little bit. You know, it just went Keith, then Kelly afterwards, just sort of that threesome getting rid of the last two stragglers. Do you feel like if we see Aubrey or Ceri go home, that things will be as neat and tidy as it was during Cambodia?
Well, I think that we don't have as clear cut of a final three from that group. So it was back in Cambodia, you had the Jeremy, Spencer, Tasha side, and then Kimmy was the fourth, and she ended up swinging and trying to vote with Kelly and Keith, where here I don't think that we have, it seems like you have Brad and Troy, they're a solid pair. Sarah voted with them, and you would think that, I think Ty is potentially still with that group. So it seems like more of a 4-2 split. But as we saw with Kimmy breaking off, you only need one person to go from the 4 to the 2, and then you have a 3-3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess from a storytelling perspective as well, just because you had to designate so much time to that tribal council in Cambodia, I do feel like we just needed to like yada yada through Keith, then Kelly to eventually get to the final tribal council. Whereas Millennials versus Gen X, there was still some interesting dynamics going on right up until the final vote, right up before final tribal council. So I guess we'll see, but it is interesting, against like what I said before, these three guys have been, you know, stragglers, losing their allies back and forth throughout the entire post-merge. But if they play these idols right, they do stand a chance of becoming the final three, which is pretty ridiculous to think about.
Yeah. Do you feel like that Ty, Troy, and Brad, if Ty does indeed give Brad one of these idols, they could pull this three amigos type move and say, we're not going home?
Well, especially if Ty has immunity. I mean, Ty has been sure to not reveal that he had any idols after, you know, he was able to use one happenstance to save Sierra during that Malcolm vote. But he's been pretty hush-hush, even though as Suri sort of alludes to this episode, you have to sort of assume that Ty at any point in time is going to have an idol somewhere, because that's just Ty Trang's MO. Whereas I don't remember if Troyzan... Did Troyzan tell Sarah that he had an idol? I can't remember.
I don't remember if he
did. It was like one of the five things Troyzan said this season. I'm surprised we don't remember it.
Yeah, I think that he was just telling her that maybe he would work with her. And that was when she talked about sticking with the group was going to be...
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
So I don't remember, but she hasn't mentioned it again. So I know it also hasn't come up. So Who's to say? I mean, we could keep talking about this all day, but we have a lot more to get to, Mike.
And any you know, postulating is just going to get invalidated within the first, like, 10 minutes of the episode anyway.
Yes. Did I mention also that a 3-3 tie will force a immediate rock draw?
So, and you talked about this a little bit with Spencer. Who would it be between? Because in a regular situation, if there was a tie between Suri and Aubrey, they would be immune, but then nobody would be left.
Well, that would be different. That would be if you were going to have, back at the San Juan del Sur Final Six, you had where Natalie Anderson and Baylor got a 2-2-2 going so that they could, flush an idol and get John Mish out of the game at that point. But here, that would force a rock draw if they couldn't do it. So I think the scenario I was saying with Spencer is if that group of four of Brad, Troy, Sarah, and Ty were sticking together, if Aubrey and Suri could get the person with immunity or Sarah with the legacy advantage, just vote with us. Just initiate the 3-3 tie so we have a chance to pull rocks. That's all we're asking. Sort of like how Kathy gets Vesepia to go to rocks because Vesepia is immune, not to go to rocks, but at least to force the 2-2 vote. And it's like, just let me pick a rock. You're immune anyway.
Yeah. Or it's like what they've been doing as of late with the final four tribal councils of like, hey, just let me make fire. Mm-hmm. Like, just throw me a vote. That's all I need. So it's interesting that we're now sort of shifting this out from 4 to 6 even.
And maybe they could do something with like, hey, Sarah, we'll vote for you in the final 2. If you do this for us, if you give this to us, like, is there some leverage there that would get her to say, you know what, Sarah, would you just go to rocks with us?
I would.
Okay, good. Thank you.
No, we're going to rocks, not wood.
Yes. And she wouldn't have to pick a rock because she was immune and has a legacy advantage. All right. So exactly. Let's go to this question. This is from Nick, and he has a question about whether or not this move that happened in terms of Sarah giving Suri the secret advantage should have been allowed.
Hi, Rob. This is Nick. I think the producers messed up. If the advantage says non-transferable and Sarah gives it to Suri, then it is Sarah who transferred the idol and the producers should have intervened to prevent the transfer. Non-transferable document is defined as a document that belongs to one person and cannot be legally given to another person or used by them. What do you think?
Yeah.
You didn't do this right, Jeff.
Okay. So do you think that they should not have even allowed Sarah to give the thing to Suri? I mean, it does say it's non-transferable. I mean, this is a good point.
Yeah, but I mean, from what we have heard behind the scenes, I don't think people even realize what non-transferable meant. I mean, I think when Probst talked to Dalton Ross about all this, he said, we never saw this one coming, never even considered it might happen. And I feel like that's just a good microcosm that represents the way production might have handled all of this, in that, like, I just think they didn't realize that this type of thing could happen. These are players sort of outsmarting the show, and that they realize a different amalgam to use this twist. And I would assume if had they realized, oh, someone could give this to someone else, they would absolutely make it possible. But I think they just happened to not think about that scenario. And as a result, that one magic hyphenated word happened to make its way onto the fine print.
Did you agree with what I was saying on the know-it-alls in terms of why they made it non-transferable, just in case they didn't want to get into some sort of, like, he said, or in this case, she said situation of, I gave it to her. No, I didn't.
Yeah, we're getting into, like, Amanda and Danielle fighting over the idol clue while Colby's watching Treasure Island, and production is Colby.
Like, hey guys, we're trying to watch Tribal Council right now. Come on.
I mean, I could definitely understand that as well. But I mean, and the order of events is also interesting, too, where now that we're finding out from Kayla's words that, you know, Sarah didn't even physically give the advantage to Ceri until right before Tribal Council, hence she wasn't able to read the fine print. It's interesting now going back and watching the episode where Ceri doesn't have a physical vote steal in her hand, but she's still wheeling and dealing with it.
Gotta get that advantage in your hand so you can read through the instructions moving forward.
Yeah, because who knows? I mean, again, this transaction happened and it led to this. I mean, this moment, I very rarely have to, like, get up and walk out of the room while watching Survivor, but I had to at this point just because throw me onto the pile of Ceri fans. I love her, and it was heartbreaking in the moment to find out this big orchestrated symphony she was about to create was about to end on a possibly sour note.
How about this from a production standpoint in terms of editing the show? Should we, and again, I said on the know-it-alls, this was the most Amazing Race thing that ever happened. A lot of times on the Amazing Race, when this type of thing happens, somebody doesn't do the task correctly. We hear sort of like that, like a negative chime or something like that, or the camera pans to what they're screwing up. We, too, as the viewer, were blindsided by this rule. We had no idea that Ceri stands up to do this, and it's like, oh, actually, you can't do that. It's non-transferable. And then I guess you could say maybe it's like a genius style reveal, but should you think that we should have gotten the information that Ceri is trying to do a move that actually can't be done in the game?
I mean, I think what you're saying is representative, I think, of what the fans felt about that Tribal Council in general, even outside of the whole vote steal thing. I'm sure we'll talk about the Michaela outcome as well, is that it did feel like we were not privy to what's going on, which is very unlike Survivor. You make a great comparison to The Genius, where they make it, for those of you that haven't seen The Genius, they make a big editing trick sometimes where they'll lead us down one path. Maybe there are two alliances working on a game, and we'll see one alliance really work hard, and we're dedicated to that one alliance. That the outcome comes in, oh, the other alliance won, and now we sort of rewind and see what happens. So it would have been interesting had they done that, but that also would have been a little atypical. I know we were utilizing flashbacks earlier on this season for, like, the first time in quite some time, so maybe they're experimenting with new things. I'm trying to remember, when Sarah got the vote steal, was there a little blurb where she specifically said it was non-transferable?
I don't remember if it was or if it wasn't. I mean, it didn't jump out to me, but it's possible. I mean, she talked about how that that Stephen Fishback screwed it up, and that was the thing. So I don't know. And maybe she might have. I mean, it'll be good to see. Maybe when Josh Wiggler does his rewatch of the season coming up before the finale, he could tell us that.
Yeah, that's going to be number one, Josh, on your item list. That's your research. Do your research.
Your research.
I would.
Okay. Let's take a question. This is Tyler from Boston wants to know about Ceri at that tribal.
Hey, Rob. This is Tyler in Boston. I have a very simple question. How in the name of Jeff Probst did Ceri not get voted out at that tribal council?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's a Very good question, considering that, again, one of the reasons why I walked out of the room is because I said, oh, this is it. Ceri's done. She had a shot of making three finales.
You can't watch it if she gets voted out?
I would want to watch it eventually, but it's one of those things where, like, cringe comedy is a very, it's a tipping point for me, Rob. There are some points, I love The Office, but there are even some points of that where I, like, had to press pause, and I'm like, I'm gonna do something that benefits society for a little bit, and then I'll come back and see if I can compartmentalize these feelings. So once I saw that happen, I'm like, I don't want to watch this happen to Saria, and especially watching the fallout. I had to be drawn back in, but then we find out that no, it's Saria's right hand is the one that gets chopped off instead, which again is something that's a little confusing
Game of Thrones on us.
Yeah, very Babylonian as well. But it's interesting in that, you know, again, it's a little confusing for viewers at first onset and saying, like, where the heck did Michaela come from? Her name wasn't even brought up before the episode, except with her whole incident with Brad, which I'm sure we're going to be talking about. But I guess if we're sort of looking at this as sort of like a shot across the bow, you know, one of the reasons why I believe they got rid of Andrea above Aubrey, even though they were a tight pair, is that they felt that Andrea was someone who is more capable of winning challenges down the line, even though Michaela has not had anything translate into a big W or a big we, as it were.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, she took a pretty big we in her Ponderosa video when she got off the show.
Hold that
behind
thought.
The tent. even though that hasn't translated yet, I think people did see some of her athleticism, and that's why, I mean, Saria's made it this far because, surprisingly, she really has not come out as someone who you really need to nail down right now. I have no idea why they didn't think at this moment, okay, we've really got Serene nailed. Instead, they said, okay, let's aim for the nail that's right on her side.
Right. It is weird that this season seems to really be focused on who's good at the challenges, where we got to get rid of Andrea. Andrea's winning everything. If she gets to the end, Andrea is going to win. And I do feel like that's why Michaela is targeted, especially in an episode where she ends up being right behind Brad in terms of putting that puzzle together. So if I was Ceri, I think the worst thing she did this season was walk across the balance beam.
I can't do it. I'm the worst ever. Yeah. I could never finish a challenge. Maybe she should really just, like, I know Ceri isn't the best at challenges. That's not a reason why I love her, but she could even sandbag it further. You know, like Survivor's Ready Go, she could just, like, sit in the sand for the entire challenge.
Yeah, when she's up on that ladder.
Is she going to jump or climb? Do it, Ceri!
I can't.
No, I'm good. I mean, to be fair, the very first time that she did this challenge in Exile Island, which didn't have the puzzle element, that's where Shane poured the water down the wrong freaking tube. But, like, you have, like, wasn't there that moment where, like, Terry did, like, the Greg Louganis somersault off the pole, and then Shane did, like, a half Nelson, and Ceri's like, I'm just going to climb down, thank you very much. Like, it's clear that even when in Micronesia, Ceri was very hesitant to have to jump off the pole. So this is one of her personal demons, and she'd rather not have to confront it again.
All right, let me ask you a further question about Ceri. This is from Millennial Max in Michigan.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Millennial Max from Michigan. So, if Ceri gets voted out right before Final Tribal Council, do you think that they would cancel Survivor right away? Or do you think they would wait until they've aired the seasons that they've already filmed? Which do you think?
All right, Mike. When would they cancel Survivor if Ceri gets voted out at the Final Four?
35 is going right to CBS All Access.
Okay. Well, that's fair. That's a good idea.
Survivor OTT, because the show totally went OTT with Ceri losing.
Yeah. Oh, that's very sad. Now, I think that if I was like a total Ceri homer and not an impartial podcaster like I am, I think I'd sign on the dotted line right now for Ceri to get to four. I feel like that she's got her work cut out for her to get through six and five.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to make the declaration right now that Ceri is not making it to the final three. And that's going to be heartbreaking for her. I mean, I didn't include in our final words podcast Ceri's final words from Micronesia just because, oh my God, they're heartbreaking. And she says, you know, like, I guess it's just not meant to be. And it is crushing. And to have her come back two more times after that moment takes a lot of gusto. But especially considering the position that she's in, and especially considering, I think one reason why you mentioned before why they're so focused on challenges is because they're only a few spots from the end. And with less and less people, a challenge win is extremely important because that gets you one day further. you know, I feel like with less and less people in the game, nobody, now that Michaela's out of the game, nobody's going to want to take Ciri to the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that maybe people might not have thought of her in that way. And then that got quickly dashed when I was talking to Andrea the other day. She's like, are you kidding me? I was like, I don't know.
I was intrigued as well because for a while I was ecstatic about this, but I was like ecstatically incredulous, if that's a thing, about the fact that like, wow, Saria's made it all the way through the game without a freaking vote cast against her. Still, even at this point, even one of her, you know, unintentional biggest blunders in her Survivor career at this point, she still hasn't had a vote against her. And I was wondering if maybe it's more of an in-game perception rather than an out-of-game perception. I feel like one of the things about the pre-merge and one reason why, you know, some of these bigger people went is because of their pre-existing reputations. But I guess the further you get in the game, the more insular you get, and the more you think about, oh, it's not necessarily what Ciri did in her three previous seasons, it's more so what Ciri's doing for me now. And because there was so much going on back and forth with, you know, your Debbies and your Sierras and your Zeke's and your Andreas, Ciri was able to be pretty comfortably under the radar, which again is super surprising considering she's one of the biggest players in the game ever. But I guess it just goes to show how if you put yourself in a nice position socially going into a big spot like the merge, you can do pretty well for yourself, all things considered.
Yeah. I mean, that Sandra has made a living off of this.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's another reason as well why, you know, I can totally understand why people take umbrage with the fact that like, oh, all the big names went early on in this season. You know, I think there have been a lot of comparisons between this season and the OG returning player season, Rob, your very own Survivor All-Stars.
I remember it well.
All 12 days of it in that bigger names.
How dare you, Mike?
I apologize. That was a low blow. In that the bigger names going in definitely went out earlier because it makes sense. It stinks, but it makes sense from a gameplay perspective because these are the people that if you give an inch, they're going to take a mile and you don't want to give them any sort of touch of that ruler whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, you touched on some of the secret scenes coming up this week, which I thought were very fun in terms of a little more insight into the world of Michaela. Now, on this episode, we got to see Michaela have a confrontation with Brad Culpepper. And I want to talk about this a little bit. I don't have a question about it, but I want to play the clip. This was when Michaela went to go talk to Brad out in the jungle.
My only suggestion is go fishing.
Go fishing? What do you mean?
Like, go fish and bring back fish at low tide.
Mike, what did you think of Michaela telling Brad to,
Like, go fish.
He doesn't have to like go fish. He just has to go fish. I mean, first of all, it's not blackmail. Sorry, Brad. I know you're a lawyer, but I don't believe that's the definition of blackmail. Mm-hmm. I know we have Culpepper math. Maybe we now have Culpepper vocabulary, where it doesn't exactly match up. But I mean, this again, I think just shows the struggle that they were going through. But I sort of love the audacity that Michaela had to be like, well, you know, I'm doing this for your benefit. Mm-hmm. If you're going out fishing, you're not going to be looking for an idol unless it's the middle of the ocean. So win-win. You're safe, or you're regarded as less of a suspicious character, and you get to bring back num-nums for my tum-tum.
Yeah, so get to it. Go for it. Now, I touched on this in the exit interview with her, but she talks about in one of the secret scenes about how she was telling him like, hey, I don't want to vote you out next. So why don't you go in the ocean and then nobody will say that you're looking for an idol that could potentially help you. That'd be a good thing.
Yeah, and I love that Michaela mentions Brad's highlighter ass shorts.
Yes, this is what she talks about when she is describing the conversation she had with Brad.
Yeah, what happened? Okay.
I'm walking looking for him. Mind you, he got on some highlighter ass shorts, don't he?
Yep.
You can see the mugs from afar.
Some highlighter ass shorts, Mike.
Yeah, that's all going to be the rage. First it's the romp him, now it's the highlighter ass shorts.
Highlighter ass shorts. So Michaela did not like them. Did she call them Uggs?
Yeah, what happened? Okay.
I'm walking looking for him. Mind you, he got on some highlighter ass shorts, don't he? You can see them mugs from afar.
Well, we didn't look at Brad's feet. He could have been wearing Uggs for all
we
know.
He might have been. He might have been wearing some Uggs.
Could you imagine Brad Bev Culpepper wearing these like 1920 swimmies and Ugg boots while he's looking for coconuts?
Yes, maybe some vintage Uggs.
I love antiquing and I like to decorate.
Yeah.
This is a 2007 Ugg in pristine condition.
Yeah. Now, Mike, the conversation that Michaela had with Brad, again, was not received well. Here is Brad talking about all of that with Troy Zan in that secret scene.
You better go catch some fish or you're going home.
That's such a millennial move.
Yeah, what a millennial move by Michaela.
What was cut out of that conversation is then Michaela said, and I want you to get me a participation trophy, too, with that fish.
Yes.
And if you could get me some milk and put it on one of those coconut drones.
But those guys really did not get along with Michaela. Although Michaela said in her exit interview with me, she got along with Troy Zan. Okay. She said that Troy Zan reminded her of Jay, which is sort of ironic because I feel like that Jay, maybe this is why he reminded her of Troy Zan.
Okay. High school, college, 9 to 5. Get a life.
It's a pretty good Troy Zan impression.
Yeah, yeah, compare that to...
click, 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 click.
Little did we know, maybe this is another one to add to the time travel theory that Troy Zan is... Jay felt so just besides himself when he played a fake idol that he traveled back in time. It's like, all right, I need a name. Troy Zan. Yeah, that's the ticket. Troy Zan.
Yeah. Wow. So Jay is past Troy Zan.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess we have to think about like, yeah, I guess Jay went from like 9 to 5 to going like super aggro now. It's so interesting, I guess, now charting the personality. But wow, we stumbled upon yet another. I can't wait for like Survivor 42 when they just find a time machine on the islands of Fiji and they decide to start sending contestants through.
Okay, high school, college, 9 to 5. Get a life.
Yeah, no, not gonna do it. I'm gonna go out there and make my own way in the world. Be Troy Zan.
Yes, absolutely. I am gonna find a camera, take pictures from 9 to 5.
Click, 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 click.
I also just want to talk about how Michaela got into it with Troy Zan then at that tribal council, where here is when they're trying to have a conversation and then Troy Zan is getting all up in that. Here's Michaela getting upset.
No, back up.
What the hell for?
Slide to the side.
I haven't heard slide to the side since my cousin's bar mitzvah when we were doing the cha-cha slide.
Yeah, not the electric slide?
No, that's the millennial version. I know Troy Zan's going to disparage it. We don't do the electric slide now. It's the cha-cha slide where everything is explicitly explained to us because we're millennials and we can't take anything really permeating deep into our cerebral cortex.
Slide to the side.
Maybe Troy Zan wanted to inch closer to Michaela because he knew from previous experience what working with Michaela was like.
Yeah, maybe that was it. You know, we got to see then in the past, or I guess the future for, I know, it's the past for Troy Zan and the past for Michaela way back when she got voted out in Millennials versus Gen X. We all remember this reaction.
What?
But we said, oh, what a great moment. That was such a fantastic Survivor moment. But Mike, I don't know. That might just be the way that Michaela reacts to everything. Here is Michaela after she got voted out in her Ponderosa video when they decided to weigh Michaela.
What? 131?
I want to see Michaela get like, I don't know, like a bill from the IRS.
Well, forget a bill from the IRS. It's sort of like she calls an Uber and it's going to be 3 minutes late.
What?
I love it. I mean, it's hard to gauge reactions out of Michaela then, but I guess if you live life to the extreme, everything needs to be taken as an extreme.
Yeah, she really reacts the same way to everything. But then in this same video where they were going to weigh Michaela, she had a concern before they were going to weigh her, Mike.
Yes, she had to make some water before...
Blood water? No.
Yeah, hopefully she's been having a good enough diet to not make blood
okay,
water.
This is a little grave. If you're really sensitive, maybe you want to skip ahead 30 seconds. Here's Michaela before her weigh-in in the Ponderosa video.
I'm going to tinkle before I get weighed so you can get my genuine weight, Dr. Joe. I don't want to be overweight, Dr. Joe. Can y'all hear that pee? Oh, okay. Oh, that was like 1 pound of pee right there.
I remember the Shakespearean play Measure for Measure is all about a pound of pee demanded from a man who owed money to Shylock.
A pound of pee. Wow. Was Brad Culpepper referencing that when
he said this? First Culpepper, gotta take back the necklace.
Parting such sweet sorrow.
Yes, he's also a fan. Is that Shakespeare?
Yes, absolutely. These are the most scholarly pursuits that we're examining out here on Survivor. I mean, there's so much fun things about this scene. First off, Dr. Joe's face is perfect because this is the guy who, like, just like a year prior was bringing people back to life after Caleb almost died out in Koh Rong, and now he has to wait while someone pisses their brains out before getting weighed in.
Yeah, I don't know. Is this like a scene from like an Austin Powers movie? That
can y'all hear that pee?
I mean, how bad did Michaela have to go during tribal council?
I do wonder, and I mean, you can tell me firsthand since you've been through it. I mean, do you take bathroom breaks during tribal council? I know that they can go long. Is there a time that they can sort of say, okay, time out, nobody talk, let's take a bathroom break?
There's no bathroom break during tribal council. That is not a thing that I've ever heard of in any tribal council that I've been to or any survivor ever has told me about that they did a bathroom break. You know, you're sort of locked in over there. It's like an official type of thing, and they don't want people like going off to the bathroom and like people talking when somebody's on a bathroom break. I mean, there is an opportunity before, if you have to go to the bathroom, you can go to the bathroom. Like your tribe gets, you know, you get to tribal council and you're sort of like standing around for a couple of minutes or for a while. Well, you know, they're setting everything up there. I mean, there were times in the Amazon we were waiting for the sun to go down because it would be dark enough to shoot the tribal council. And you're sort of like standing there and nobody's allowed to talk. If you have to go to the bathroom, there's an opportunity there. It just seems like, Michaela really was living dangerously at that tribal council.
Can y'all hear that pee?
Yeah, like I said, she lives life to the extreme. I'm surprised she didn't say what in response to all the pee that came out of her.
Yeah, or at least.
That's disgusting.
I also like the term a pound of pee.
Yeah.
Like, when's the Survivor Challenge where they have to, whoever weighs in with the most pee goes on reward?
Right, Mike. It's also quite unusual to hear a pound in a liquid measure. You would think maybe a gallon or even a cup. But a pound is weird to use the weight in a liquid measure.
All right, Michaela, you weigh 131 and your pee comes in at 0.9 pounds. Good job, pee.
What?
Yeah.
Though I think it would have to be that the pee comes in at exactly 1 pound because it is number one.
It's number one. So good job by Michaela in one of the more graphic secret scenes that we've had in it's a Ponderosa video, I should say. One other thing, I think this was from the Andrea Ponderosa video, and again, kudos to the team that does the Ponderosa videos because they're always great. At the Andrea Ponderosa video, there was a lot of chit chat with everybody talking about the game that Andrea had played, and there was some conversation with Debbie about how everybody in the game has basically gone out at the same point or in a similar way to their previous time out, and she thought that that was pretty eerie.
You know,
that's bizarre. Like, so many of us went out virtually the exact same place we went out prior.
Yeah.
I've been. Oh, kind of. Duty, 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 yeah. Duty.
What is it with Debbie? Scorpion poop.
Yeah, was this confirming the Zeke story?
I think she was trying to hint to everyone. Really just plant that seed in the brain of like, ooh, verbal connection. Who's going to have their Kaiser Soze moment and drop their mug and realize that I was the mad pooper?
Doody, 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 yeah. Doody.
I want to have Debbie go on like "Don't Forget the Lyrics" or something.
Yeah.
Doody 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 doody. Yeah.
Could somebody please loop that and we do like a Twilight Zone narration over it? In a world where people go out at the same time and in the same manner as they did before, game changers or simply repeating the past, this is the Wanner Zone.
Doody doody doody.
Submitted for your approval. Time traveling survivors, playing seasons, and never learning from mistakes.
Okay, high school, college, 9 to 5. Get a life.
Okay.
This is the most scatological episode of Survivor I think we've talked about, and this beats the episode where a guy thought he might have pooped his underwear and thrown it in with the rest of the laundry.
And I'm pissed.
All right.
No, that's Michaela.
That's Michaela.
Can y'all hear that pee?
Okay. All right. I apologize, everybody. I'm sorry. This is going to get more complaints than the News AF where we were talking about people that were eating their own boogers. It's been a bad month for the podcast.
Well, if Debbie knows anything, it's actual crapshow.
Yes, she definitely does. All right, Mike, let's get back to talking about the game. And this is a question from Nikki from Gainesville, wants to talk about whether or not Sarah made the right move.
Hey, Rowan, Mike, this is Nikki from Gainesville. I was wondering if you could talk about if this was a good move for Officer Sarah. Well, she did eliminate a potential final two of series. Now Brad and the bros have the numbers to flip the script. Personally, this episode has kept my head spinning and my face grinning all day long. Thanks so much. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Bye-bye.
Okay. Did you like the play for Sarah to vote out Michaela?
Well, first off, Nikhil should probably go see Dr. Joe himself, because that sounds like a concussion if he's spinning and grinning the entire time. unless he just is handing back an immunity necklace. You have to imagine, because I could agree, I think on paper, especially since she's been so close with people like Suri and Michaela and Aubrey for so long, that yet again, this is another example of Sarah jumping ship. It's interesting, just sort of briefly touching upon the point that you made before about how she's playing like Tony, even she's admitting like it. I would agree, but the one key difference I see is that Tony always flipped with somebody. During the Cliff Robinson vote, he flipped with Trish. During all the post-merge tribal councils with LJ, Jeffra, Trish, he flipped with Wu. And I don't know if that was some sort of accountability, almost like insuring himself, saying like, well, I didn't just flip, Wu flipped as well. I'm not entirely sure, just guaranteeing numbers. But Sarah's doing this completely singularly, and this can go a couple of different ways. Some could, much like Zeke talks about in his Jury Speaks video, someone could completely admire it, or someone could take it as you are just burning bridges left and right till you're the only one left standing on an island. But I do wonder if she still has one last bridge back with these original three guys who, yes, she did spurn before, but she has voted with them before as well.
Mike, you mentioned the Jury Speaks video. I was watching some of those, and this seems like a new thing they're doing this season where they're interviewing people at Ponderosa about what they're thinking about the game. I was surprised at how much Zeke seems to be really stumping for Sarah at Ponderosa.
I mean, I'm not entirely concerning that. I mean, Zeke has professed he is a huge fan of the specific strategy element of the game. And I think taking interpersonal relationships aside, I think he's looking at Sarah and he's saying she's playing a hell of a game. Again, incorporating the social elements into it, it might deter the game a bit. Speaking about those videos, like you said, they're a new thing. I think they only came about a couple of weeks ago. Are you a fan of them?
I personally don't love them, just because I feel like it's more fun not hearing from the jury in terms of, like, I like the Ponderosa videos, but I don't necessarily want to know so much. And I know that it's like part of my job to watch them. So I've like looked at some of them, but I almost feel like in a way it's less fun to know that intimately what the jurors are thinking.
See, I could totally understand that, but I actually really like them because it is sort of a win-win. I think for hardcore analysts like myself who want to get our gams on as much Survivor content as possible, I think this is a great way to do so. You know, I think after a season, one of the big question marks that still exists after a final vote is why did each person vote the way they did? You know, we only see a small glimpse of that final tribal council. And this is a way to not only gauge their reactions, but gauge them from vote to vote. It's super interesting from my perspective to see, like, okay, after this happened, how does someone feel? And to see, you know, Haley, for example, is talking, or Sierra is a good example as well, thinking like, oh yeah, you know, I would want to go for Brad or Troy's in. And then in the second tribal council of the episode, she's like, wow, Sarah made a pretty ballsy move. I want to consider her too. So I think it's fun to sort of check in and see how people's opinions are changing based on what's going on at tribal council. And the other win side is that, like you said, if you want to let the mystery be and have that information depart from your head, so to speak, you're able to do that as well. You don't need to look at it. You can just tune into the final tribal council and see how people interact. So I feel like it's actually appeasing both the fans who want to get a little more inside information as to what people are thinking, but also at the same time, those that would rather remain in the dark for now and let it play out on the show proper.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I didn't really think about this until you mentioned it, but, you know, Josh had talked about at the Live Know-It-Alls that he was asked about, you know, things that the show might do in terms of, like, you know, trying to get the jury to, there was some talk about the bitter jury, basically that this was filmed right after we had the Koh Rong finale, and there was so much talk about why did the jury vote the way that they did? And it feels like to me that this is sort of like a conscious response from the show to say, okay, well, rather than have to just try to guess what the jury is thinking after you see the vote, this way you could sort of see like the evolving narrative coming from the jurors as they're watching the season play out. So nobody in the audience is going to get blindsided by the way that the jury votes at the end.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things, and just speaking towards the concept of like a bitter jury as well, I personally don't believe in the term bitter jury. That sounds very like no collar in me. I don't believe in bitter juries, but I think that a bitter jury is sort of like an umbrella term, and it sort of obfuscates like the idea of like, oh yeah, it's a bitter jury. All seven people voted out of pure spite and anger. And I talked previously on the voicemails, I think it was last season, about the fact that like, I don't behoove people with their votes. They can do whatever the heck they want with their votes. They suffered out there in the wilderness. They can do whatever they want with their votes. But I think when you say like, oh, it was a bitter jury, if you call like All Stars a bitter jury, for example, you're discounting people like Rupert and Jenna, who genuinely liked and respected Boston Rob and gave him their vote, or Shiann, someone who actually really respected the heck out of Amber's game and gave her the winning vote by saying, oh yeah, only three, if three people showed angry feelings, that's a bitter jury. That's too much of a generic term for me. So I feel like this is a great way to see into the individual perspectives of each and every juror and really give us more knowledge about it, because I think some people get angry at the results because they feel like the jury got it wrong. From our quote unquote objective perspective, the jury were making decisions that they were clearly entrenched in emotionally, that weren't based on logical things from what we've seen play out. But what people don't realize is that we're not seeing the capital T truth, right? We're seeing the lowercase t truth. There's something that's being brought to us every week that's edited down. We haven't experienced things on the island like they do. So in a manner of speaking, we're seeing our own perspective, much like the jury is. So I feel like this is a great way to sort of make people realize that everyone's sort of undergoing their individual observations from the show, and we're part of that perspective as well.
All right, let's play a voicemail. This is from Chad Shepard, who wants to ask about Brad's reaction to winning immunity this week, Mike. Here is Chad.
Chad Shepard here, representing the Legion of Bloom. I'm rooting for Sarah, hashtag Team DV. But how about that moment after Brad won the immunity challenge and the reaction? It was such a Troy's end, this is my island moment. And did you see Troy's reaction? Bad move, dude. But do you think this will actually hurt Brad moving forward? Drop the boom, Bloom.
He ascended out of my swampy lair in the Legion of Bloom to send that voicemail. I'm so touched.
So here is Brad's response to winning immunity at the final seven.
Culpepper, guaranteed a spot in the final six.
Damn right. Damn right.
Ooh, a little emotion going.
Pick somebody else, people.
Yeah. Pick somebody else, Mike.
Troy's just going, woo. Ooh.
Yeah. Right then, like, oh, bad move, buddy.
Been there, done that.
Woof.
9 to 5. Get a job.
Yeah.
Slide to the side. Slide to the side.
To avoid the sand that Brad was throwing around as well.
Yeah. Brad, really, we have not seen him react that way at all this season.
But I think it shows that Survivor players at their essence are human. And that, again, I think that people are at the end of their rope emotionally, that they're reacting on all sides of the spectrum. All members of the Inside Out cast are represented when on your time out on Survivor. And Lewis Black's anger came to the forefront when Brad ended up winning here. Because, I mean, he did feel like he was in legitimate danger, even though he was the secondary target at the last Tribal Council. He knows that he's still in the minority alliance, and so he let the adrenaline flow a little bit. And, you know, Troy Zan was obviously there to experience it. He had his own moment where that happened as well. We've had numerous Survivor celebrations through the years where people have celebrated as a big win for them. So I'm not going to begrudge Brad for his celebration whatsoever, especially because I love all challenge reactions, especially anything involving Michaela and her foot.
I was going to say, Brad was not the only person who got emotional at that immunity challenge. I like that very snarky response from Jeff of she kicks the puzzle, which always helps.
I mean, for all we knew, the pieces could have slid into form. I mean, maybe Michaela thought she was doing that challenge where she has to put the things together with her feet, and she just was maybe mixing up two different challenges. But yeah, I love Snarky Probst. Snarky Probst is, I feel like he's been showing his head since like around the like Amazon Pearl Islands All-Stars era. So I'm always happy when he throws a comment out like that.
He usually like reserves that for Penner, where he'll be like, hey, don't get mad at me. Get mad at the puzzle, brother. Like, I'll get mad at you if I want.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it seems like he's able to extend that that sarcasm to other players. But again, I mean, Michelle Fitzgerald kicked a puzzle after she won. So maybe Michaela was trying to just embody the most recent winner. You know, maybe it's not necessarily play like the winner of your own season, but play like the winner of the most recent season you saw.
Right, right. She kicked the puzzle after she completed it, not a incomplete puzzle. I think we need Michaela's mom there to...
Finish the puzzle first.
Yeah.
Can y'all hear that, Pete?
No, no. Michaela's mom.
Oh, Michaela, calm down.
Stop yelling that from the bathroom, Michaela. We can hear the pee.
All right, Mike. Here's a question that everybody has been waiting for us to answer. Let's bring in the Woj.
It's time to play Who Will Not Speak? Tonight's contestants are three-time champion Rob Cesternino and second chancer Mike Bloom. They're going to pick three game changers who Jeff will not ask a question to at the reunion. The player with the lowest score will win a baby goat for their very own. Place your bets now!
Now, am I allowed to do with the goat what I want?
You can do whatever you want, Mike. Okay.
Okay, good.
All right, so here is the game that we have been playing this since Survivor Cambodia, and Mike Bloom has never won.
I only played once.
I think we've played on this three times, Mike.
Yeah, but I have now. I have had Bryce Isaiah and Jordan Parhar in my stead. Thank you very much.
Oh, is that, it's not always you?
No. This was always the last voicemail show, but I was ushered off when I lost this, so I'm happy to be given, as okay, the Woj referred to, my own second chance.
All right, in my head, it's I've always been playing you.
That's great. Thank you for conflating the me just losing every time. I'll be the face of the losing contestant on this. I'll be happy with that.
Yeah. All right, great. So, Mike, very excited to have you back for the Who Will Not Speak. You famously picked Sierra Easton way back in Survivor Cambodia, and she got a question like within 5 seconds of the reunion show.
She was the first one asked.
Sierra, gotta know.
No, you don't, Jeff. You don't gotta know from her. She went 10th place, Jeff. 10th freaking place.
Okay, so here's how the game is going to work. You want the lowest possible score. We'll each pick three people. Just to keep the scoring simple, we are looking for three things. We are looking for direct questions to a player, the player blurting out sentences, and the player's name being mentioned in answers. So we want people that won't get mentioned, people that won't be blurting, and people that certainly won't get a question given to them. Now, Mike, are we still on board with the scoring system of you get 3 points to your person if they get asked a question, 2 points if they speak out of turn, and 1 point for being mentioned?
I think that's fair, but this is a tough one, Rob. This might be the toughest one that you and I guess the conglomerate of me's, the 100 Blooms, have done since the inauguration of this game. Because usually you could throw out some easy fodder by saying that, yeah, most likely the pre-jury contestants won't really be talked to. But this was a really, really exciting and very eventful pre-merge that had some of the arguable biggest names coming into the cast sitting there in the back row. That you gotta hope there's gonna be some questions thrown their way as well. So everything's a little thrown out of funk.
Okay. It's gonna be tricky, Mike. Nobody said this was gonna be easy. You are the visitor. You'll get the first pick, the fourth pick, and the fifth pick. I'll pick second, third, and sixth.
Okay. First pick. So I knew I was coming on to do this, so I was debating between a few. But it's tough because, again, I feel like even the ones that we do pick, there are legitimate reasons why they could get a question thrown to them. We also have this larger factor in this Zeke Varner controversy. There's going to be a segment dedicated to it. It could be something a la the Worlds Apart finale where there's some time dedicated to it, which sort of pushes aside the chance for other questions to get asked. So there's a lot more factors, I feel like, in play than in previous seasons. I'm going to go with, all right, so I'm going to start. I know that I said we had a very eventful pre-merge, but there's one in terms of a character and a reputation perspective that kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. In addition to the sore thumb, the rest of him was feeling pretty sore when he was evacuated from Ko Rong. This might bite me in the butt. Give me Beast Mode Cowboy for my first pick.
Great pick. That would have been my number one pick.
Yeah, because I think there's a chance he just had a kid. There might be a question like, catching up with the back row. Caleb, you have a baby. How's your life doing now? But again, if there's time dedicated to other things like the Zeke Varner stuff or any of the craziness that's going on near the end game, I feel like Caleb of all the pre-mergers would have the best chance of getting shut out.
Okay. All right. Great job there, Mike.
I haven't screwed it up so far.
So far, so good. All right. This is going to be... I've got two picks to make. One I think is good, and the other one's kind of unconventional. I'll say that the number two player off the board is somebody who probably went out in one of the most uneventful tribal councils, maybe second only to the person that you picked. But I'm going to go with Haley. I don't know if she gets this. I don't think she got a question at Worlds Apart. She's not a blurter. I don't know who's going to mention her in a story. So I'll go with Haley. Number two off the board.
That was going to be my number two pick as well. Again, I think the only caveat is Jeff did mention on the fly during Aaron Sebula's ET interview that he thought, you know, she was the hottest survivor castaway of all time. It's possible he could just throw a question to her. He could pull a Michelle Schubert at the Millennials versus Gen X finale that I believe lost Jordan Parhar / myself, apparently, the game. So he could possibly throw it to the random for sure. We know Haley's very well-spoken, but I think in terms of her impact on the game, it's a solid pick.
I don't think there's enough time to get to her. And again, Mrs. Jeff Probst could be in the audience, and then he's not going to want to...
Don't want to be in the doghouse.
Right, doesn't want to get in the doghouse. I can relate to that. All right, so number three pick off the board. This is the one that's probably unconventional, and maybe some people might think it's not such a great pick, including my podcast co-host every Wednesday night. And I would say that I don't know what Jeff Probst is going to ask JT.
It's interesting because JT was so instrumental in those few episodes in the middle game. You'd have to assume if there are a couple of episodes or a couple of questions based around Malcolm's boot that JT might be affiliated with it.
Yeah, they might ask Malcolm a question and then and JT could weigh in.
Always has the bad side of things, but always ends up good. We'll be all right.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, I don't know JT's problems with enunciation. They might have to schlep out the live subtitles if they want to ask him a question.
Yeah. I mean, I could see, again, this is a season like, we might have to like take on some water here where that you were going to be picking people and everybody might say something.
Well, as long as it's a pound of water and not a pound of something else.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So, yeah, I could see Jeff saying, all right, Malcolm, you know, you got burned in one of these twists. And then Malcolm be like, yeah, well, I should have never. Trusted JT, and then he just starts
always has the bad side of things, but always ends up good. We'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right. So I get next two?
Yeah.
This is going to be a little bit of a risk, but like you said, it seems like all these picks moving forward.
Yeah, well,
I did not mean that Freudian slip, Michaela. stay in the Wanner zone, Debbie. I feel like... It's never not going to bust me up. I feel like these are all going to... These are all going to be a little tough because, again, there's a propensity to have these questions asked. But we sort of alluded to this previously. One person has made it super far, even to the finale, but really hasn't been involved. This person might get a question if they make the final three, but give me Jay Starrett / Troyzan.
Troyzan. Oh.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, again, this is really a Rafe's choice among people, but I feel like Troyzan has not been so prominent in the main storyline. There's a chance that he may go out in a crazy style or he makes the finals and he gets a question thrown to him, but I feel like if I'm trying to mitigate as much damage as possible, might as well go with somebody who really has not been seen that much in 12 episodes of the show.
The reason why I didn't go for Troyzan is that I think that Troyzan has been very vocal about how he has not got, at least on social media, he's talked about how he has not gotten any airtime. I think that Jeff Probst does like Troyzan, and I feel like that he will throw him a bone.
That could be interesting, or production could dig in the knife a little further by saying, oh, you're going to, you know, almost like what they did with Dan Foley. Oh, you're going to badmouth us. Well, we'll show you how powerful we are. No questions for you.
It's possible. It's possible. I can't speak to, I don't know what the relationship might be or.
Yeah. Well, lots of postulating here.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm just sort of like just going by Occam's razor that, you know, he didn't figure into what was going on. Jeff might feel bad and might throw him a bone.
All right. So my final pick, Rob, they say insanity is doing the same thing multiple times and expecting different results. And people who have been listening to me on the podcast know I am anything but sane.
Pick somebody else, people.
No, I just for the lols, I gotta do it. I gotta pick Sierra.
Shut the front door.
Sierra Easton. Let me be clear. Sierra Easton, so nobody's confused.
Okay. Jeff loves Sierra Easton.
But Sierra Easton went first and was rather innocuous to the rest of the game. I do feel like there's a chance everyone left would get a question, but the person who probably has the least chance to get a question, even though, as you said, Jeff loves her, first person for some reason to get a question at Cambodia was Sierra Easton. So I feel like I gotta double down and see if I get the same result.
It's a solid pick. It's a much better pick here than it was in Second Chances.
Yeah, maybe I was just looking into my own future, a la Dre with Troyzan, and knew that I would, you know, let me lock down this pick now, because I know that I have a premonition that sometime in the future, I'm going to have to use it. Oh, I thought it was. Apparently, since I'm in it every year, apparently, I guess I can't keep these picks.
Doody, 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 doody.
In a world where people represent Mike Bloom, even though he doesn't realize it. And so who's on my team now? I have Michelle Schubert. Paul's on my team. Paul from Millennials versus Gen X, if he ever comes back.
Yeah. Yes. You inherited all those people.
Okay. Great.
All right. So for me, I can talk this through because this is my last pick. I'm thinking of a couple of people here. For me, I'm definitely considering Sierra Dawn Thomas. She definitely was a much bigger factor in this season than she was in her previous season. I mean, I don't think she got a question. That the last finale, the Worlds Apart finale, was actually, you know, kind of bizarre because we had everything going on with the Second Chance voting. I'm just trying to think of the question that he would ask Sierra at the finale. He has all these big personalities here. She certainly was a factor in the game, but I just don't know what would come up that he would say, all right, Sierra, gotta know, where do we go with that? The other person that I'm thinking about is somebody that we've actually talked about quite a bit. I would say maybe Michaela.
What?
Yeah. Ooh, that's interesting.
Because what's he going to ask her?
I have no idea. I mean, Jeff Probst throws out these random questions sometimes that, you know, could randomly catch the wind. Michaela could just be something like, you know, Michaela, you seem like you were getting in fights out there. You know, did you let your true personality show? With Sarah, I do feel like if we see a Sarah topic of conversation, Jeff could say, Sierra, I gotta know. You gave the legacy advantage to her. What does that show to you about Sarah's game overall?
Yeah, okay. All right, you talked me into it, Mike. I will say, I think that, yeah, that's a more natural topic of conversation. They could talk about the legacy advantage and the move that Sarah made. So that could come up, and I will say I will go with Michaela. Sorry.
Slides aside. Slides aside.
Sorry.
Sorry. Yes. Well, I think, you know, again, this is probably the toughest one that we have done so far. So I think there are going to be points on the board no matter what. This really might become a game of inches.
Yeah. Okay. So the people that Mike Bloom thinks will not get questions, will not get mentions, will not be blurting. Also, I think Troyzan could be a blurter, by the way.
That actually could be very true as well. I might be wasting 2 points every time Troyzan decides to open his mouth.
Could be a blurter. Okay. So my team is Haley, JT, and Michaela. Mike Bloom's team, Team Bloom, is Caleb, Troyzan, and Sierra Easton. There you go.
Welcome to the Legion of Bloom,
Legion
folks.
Of Bloom. It's happening. All right. Let's take our next question. And this is one that's from Andrew Kirk, has a question about Andrea, who we haven't spoken much about here in her boot episode week. So let's do an Andrea question.
Hey, Rob and Mike Bloom. This is Andrew Kirk calling from California. My question to Mike is, with you being a Survivor historian, can you think of anybody besides Andrea who has been blindsided 3 times in her three times playing? And can we officially call her the blindside queen who stays queen? Love you guys' thoughts on that. Thanks.
And the queen stays queen.
Mike, has any other survivor besides Andrea been blindsided 3 times? Actually, Andrea got voted out twice in Redemption Island.
She got blindsided 4 times, so that might set her record.
I don't think she got blindsided
overall.
The second time.
Yeah, I mean, I think she was praying that Ashley Underwood would help save her, but alas, it wasn't anything. So I'm trying to remember to think right now about who would be blindsided.
Is there anybody that got blindsided 3 times? So we should look at the 3-time survivor players.
Mm-hmm.
How many people? What's the number of 3-timers?
Well, here's a question. Does blindside mean you get eliminated? Because I could throw out a name like Jerry Manthe, for example, who first time out got blindsided by Colby, Tina, and Keith. Second time out got blindsided in Lex deciding to take out her over Amber.
Did she get blindsided the second time?
Lex talked to her, right? He sat her down.
Yeah,
like, I just want to tell you.
I think that a blindside is that you get voted out and you did not know that you were going to get voted out.
It's tough because I feel like of all the 3-time players, they knew what the vote was going, you know, at least 1 time. I mean, Candace Cody got blindsided twice, but I feel like she knew in Cook Islands that first vote was coming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Tyson would have been prime, but Tyson won the last time. Maybe he got blindsided by his own win, if that counts.
Yeah, he gets blindsided by his own win. I don't think so. Let's let the commenters dabble in this one and see if they can figure it out. Somebody
Absolutely.
That got blindsided 3 times in 3 different seasons. It's tricky.
Well, speaking towards Andrea a little bit, because like you said, we didn't talk too much about her. I'm so interested by Andrea this time out because she really reminds me, oddly enough, of Amanda Kimmel in some ways, in that I feel like her and Amanda are sort of in this category of Survivor players where they're always going to do at least pretty well. I know you had trepidations about Andrea playing to the point of where you vocalized those trepidations to her.
Stupidly did that.
I think it was fine. I think, you know, you experienced firsthand what going out there might do to your reputation. I mean, Andrea seems like she's totally fine not playing anymore
after
this.
To be fair, I wasn't concerned with Andrea's Survivor legacy. What I had said to Andrea when I spoke to her back in April, I went to go and I appeared on the People Morning show that she did. And we did the Debbie exit interview, which again puts us back into the Wanner zone.
Doody, 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 doody.
And I said to Andrea, I said, what the hell do you need this aggravation for? You have a good job. You have a good gig. You know, you worked really hard to get here. I mean, why go on Survivor and you can, you know, jeopardize everything? I mean, everything worked out great. But, you know, you could get like a parasite. Any number of terrible things could happen to you when you're out there.
She could come back like Lieutenant Dan. Lieutenant Dandria has no legs because the parasites.
Right. Right. I said, look, maybe they'll find somebody to take your job while you're gone. And then, you guys are like that would be bad. But again, I'm just a pessimist by nature.
Well, I guess so. Again, speaking towards that, I feel like people like her and Amanda. I mean, there's no coincidence that Amanda was the first to join the 100-day club that Andrea now occupies. Is that I feel like they're physical enough that they're not going to be targeted as a weak link. They're social enough in that they're always going to be regarded pretty well, except when they stick their necks out like Andrea showed her past couple of seasons. And they're strategic enough that they're going to be able to make at least some moves in the game. So I feel like Andrea can now sort of be lumped into this category of people who have the great, or at least a good enough skill set to always do well on Survivor. It's no coincidence that, you know, eighth is her lowest placement in her three seasons of playing.
Andrea is a great Survivor player, and I was stupid to say she shouldn't go.
Well, you were cautioning her, you know? You were the devil on her shoulder.
Yeah, it really did come from a place of that I was trying to look out for her. I mean, that when she came up, and I talked about this a little bit at the end of the Spencer podcast, where I've had the opportunity to get to know a lot of the survivors, and especially like the ones that come up that are like 21, 22 years old. Like, I feel like that I try to steer them in the right direction. Unfortunately, I'm a stupid man, and I don't actually have good advice for anybody, but I do feel, especially people when we've done Mr. Survivor and Miss Survivor, that I do feel like a little bit of like a big brother, and I'm not talking about the other show that I cover with the live feeds, but a sort of like an older brother, sort of like, okay, I've been through this, and I try to like look out for the people that come up.
Yeah, I mean, you fancy yourself a Mr. Belding, but you're more so Screech in the new generation.
yeah, that's exactly. Truer words, Mike, has never been spoken. Yeah.
Where's the robot that you're building then?
It's the coming. Robot. It's finished. His name is Taryn. Okay. Mike, let's take a question that a lot of people sent us in on the voicemails. This is a question from Eddie.
Hey, Probst. I know you're listening. So stop trying to make spin and grin happen. Okay.
Spinning green.
All right, Mike, how excited were you when, after Aubrey won immunity, then when she went back to the next challenge, Jeff Probst said to her,
"First things first, Aubrey, I gotta take it back." Spinning green.
Yeah.
And they did this rack focus shot to Troyzan, just sort of like angrily sipping his water bottle. Like, Jeff, what we had was special.
No, Troyzan was the first spinner and grinner.
Yeah, you never forget your first.
Yeah, he's number
one. Technically, Troyzan's past life, he spun and grun a couple of other times, too.
Yeah, so good job.
Okay, high school, college, 9 to 5. Get a life.
So, get a necklace, spin and grin.
Mike, are you in or out on spin and grin?
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like Jeff's trying to make that catchphrase work. I mean, Eddie's definitely pulling a Regina George there. It's definitely on the level of fetch in that it raised some eyebrows the first time, but now these eyebrows are kind of furrowed in anger, saying like, Jeff, don't stop bringing this phrase up. You need to naturally let it happen.
No.
Spinning grin.
I'm all in. I'm in.
You're all in on the spinning grin?
Yes, I'm spinning, I'm grinning, I'm in.
Why?
Because it's a new thing.
It's a new thing?
Yeah. I love it.
So Jeff said like, hey, come over here to the Heezy. Give me that neckleasy. Like, you'd be totally fine with it?
Yes.
That's going to happen next season. Because apparently Probst is listening.
We're 34 seasons in. We got to mix things up. What do you want? You want new advantages or you want new catchphrases?
Let's go back to the Snoop Dogg well. All the kids love that.
Yeah. I love it.
Spinning great.
This is great.
But again, I have to point out that Aubrey seemed like she wanted to just like run off set. I mean, a lot of running from Aubrey, a lot of aerobics from Aubrey this episode and across both challenges.
I'm not necessarily sure why the person who is spinning is also grinning. Like, I get it. It's like spin and grin, you win immunity. Like, that would make more sense.
Ooh, there, you stumbled upon it. Spin, grin, and win. I feel like that's a thing.
Yeah, spin, grin, and win. Like the person, hey, Brad, wins immunity. Come over here. Spin and grin.
Spin and grin.
But then when you're, it's almost like when you're taking the necklace off you, it's more of a spin and grimace, no?
Yeah, it's around and frown.
Around and frown.
That's Jeremy's strategy, right?
that's perfect. I think so. Around and frown when you get the necklace taken off you, and then when you get it on, then you spin and grin and win.
I think it's a really easy acronym to remember as well, a mnemonic device. You know what? I think I'm back in on this now that we found the proper rhyming scheme.
Yeah, I like it.
If you try to force it and it doesn't fit, probably doesn't belong there.
No. It's good.
Jeff isn't, he's not heeding his own words.
So I like this. I like spin and grin is a thing. It's happening. That we're on the second spin and grin, Mike. If it gets said a third time, it's officially a thing.
Now, what would Aubrey's exuberant reaction would be? It would be like hug and mug. If you're like, if you decide to really like throw yourself onto Probst after winning,
hug and mug. I guess so. I mean, a lot of people wanted us to compare the Aubrey hug and the Troyzan hug from a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I was going to compare it to the Dawson hug and kiss and everything else from Survivor Philippines.
Yeah, it seems like that maybe is this a thing also that more contestants want to hug Jeff Probst? It's sort of like he's like Bob Barker when you come up to, or Drew Carey for you millennials out there. When you like come up to contestants row that you want to come up and hug him.
Speaking of forgotten Survivor Fiji contestants all the way back from the beginning of this podcast, did you know that Rita Varillos is on tape for kneeing Drew Carey in the balls accidentally?
No, I did not know this.
She gets called up to contestant row, and she's so excited that she accidentally knees Drew in the balls.
When did this happen?
This happened in like 2007, I want to say. So he was definitely he might have been spinning a little bit, but he was definitely not grinning.
Is there footage of this, or is this an urban legend?
No, there's actual footage of this. I'm actually going to try to look this up while we're doing this. But yeah,
okay, I found here is Rita from I don't know what year this is from.
I think it's 2009.
Okay, are you looking at this also?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. And now she's playing a pricing game. It's one of the lame ones where you have to like switch a price around. And
they don't wheel out the big games. They wheel out the big ones for the Survivor Prices Right. But unfortunately, a pre-merge contestant from Fiji who's known for talking about lip gloss really does not get the creme de la creme.
Okay. All right. So here is Rita.
Switch. She says switch them. Watch out. Could be dangerous. Whatever you do, don't run. Careful. Whoa.
Drew, you don't know the half of that.
That always scares me. All right, flip them. If you're right, you win both prizes. One, two, three.
That's when she needs him. So he's like doubled over. I don't think, does she know what happened?
No.
No, I don't think so.
So I think Jeff Probst should be lucky that none of the contestants, as exuberant as they are, do that to him like Rita, right, did, a Survivor contestant once did to Drew Carey.
This is a good lesson for Jeff. I think that this is that he wants to
wear a cup.
Wear a cup, or maybe he should be like high up in like some lifeguard chair calling the so then they can't get him.
They'll throw it down to you.
Yeah, like just stand right there.
You would think that after Dawson, he'd be put himself in a bubble or something so contestants could touch him. But, you know, this is also Game Changers. He has a working relationship with these people. Maybe he thought that he could get close to them. I feel like Johnny Fairplay kind of broke the mold there when he asked Jeff for a hug when he left in Micronesia.
Right. He needs to be in some sort of like a shark cage where nobody can actually touch him.
Just this big metal. Maybe he should be built into his own like jailbreak cage, like they do for those Redemption Island duels.
Yeah, that would be good. So if you like, you put the sticks together, then yeah, you can get
your pole needs to be long enough and strong enough to get the necklace from me.
Yeah, maybe they just need like some sort of like a moat where he can sort of like reach across and like still snuff a torch.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, he has an arm. He's able to throw, like, the maps and the buffs to the tribes in the beginning of the game. Why can't he throw the necklace?
Yeah. Maybe we could have, like, some seasons, like, the necklace is, like, sort of circular. Maybe it could be sort of like a frisbee. You just toss it to you.
As we know, Jeff Probst often froths, so this really is in his wheelhouse.
So, spin and grin is officially a thing. Let me play this question. I was on the fence to ask you this question or not. Here is Alex Wilpon.
What's up with Troy Zan blocking several members of the Survivor press?
Okay, so I guess this was a thing the other day on Twitter, that Troy Zan has been blocking people. And you know what? I'm team Troy Zan on this one.
How so?
That, you know what? A lot of these Survivor media types getting too big for their britches.
It's interesting because, I mean...
You know what?
I feel
be honest, I'm thinking about blocking these guys too.
Just no press is good press from your Twitter timeline perspective?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's totally logical. I think...
Did you get blocked, Mike?
Oh, boy, yeah. I know I'm walking on thin ice as it is right now. But I do feel like...
I don't want to get blocked.
Well, here's what we can do, though. It seems like Troy Zan has some sort of Google alert for every time someone mentions his name. I mean, I made tweets without tagging him and just saying Troy Zan, and they were liked by Troy Zan, including one time where I photoshopped his head on top of a chicken for some reason.
Why did you do that?
I can't remember. I think I was talking with, because I think Shireen said that in Cambodia, she named the chickens after the Left Behind 11. And so, like, she said, oh, I named one of the chickens Troy Zan. I think I just put, like, his head on top of a chicken for some reason, but he liked it. But what we can do is maybe come up with a nickname or a different version. You know, he might be searching for Troy Zan.
So basically, you're looking for, like, back in Survivor San Juan del Sur, when the Survivors were not allowed to tweet about Survivor, and they started tweeting about some other, like, random, like, NBC
mystery,
show.
Mysteries of Laura, not random, Rob. Very wholesome show.
Here, actually, let's go live to Troy Zan blocking people on social media.
Click, 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 click.
Well, here's what we can do, though. I mean,
look, and well, let me just interrupt you, Mike, just to say that I am an unapologetic Troy Zan fan.
Oh yeah, I would agree. And look, my heart goes out to him because I can totally understand, as someone who was a big character in their first season. First of all, spent countless numbers of years and effort trying to apply to be on the show, getting onto the show as a big fan, being in the running for the fan favorite prize on their season, then coming back and barely getting put on the show. I can understand why you'd be miffed because of that. But a way we can sort of get around this is that Troy Zan, I think, has a Google alert set for his name. He might not have a Google alert set for something like if we type in Roy Zan or Zan or T.Roy Zan. Mm. So we could theoretically use a coded name or even just a name that's slightly off to still be able to tweet about him without him finding it and blocking you as a result.
So you want to really subtweet that. So you want to have some sort of code name. And it doesn't have to be for Troy Zan. So you basically want to have the ability to subtweet any Survivor, and you want to do some sort of pig Latin so they don't read what you're saying and block you.
It could be a Survivor Twitter sub language where, FFSDT, there are people who didn't even know what that was for the longest time until it needs to be explained. It's simpler than you think.
Now, Mike, can't you just tweet about Survivors in ways that won't make them block you?
Oh, but that wouldn't be fun, Rob, would it? No. You'll lose all the fun from that.
In defense of the Survivor media types that if anybody is professional on social media, it's those guys, and nobody should be blocking them. I mean, they're if there's any problem on social media, it's not those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they seem like they're the most fair and balanced, considering that they are giving out coverage to the rest of the Survivor community. So I could, again, like you said, I totally understand if someone's saying hey, you are trashing me, I don't need to see this, let me block you. But I don't know. I don't know what the reason would be.
Because if any of those guys were going to be unprofessional, then they risk losing, their relationship with the show. So I think that those guys have been wrongfully persecuted here.
Yeah, lift the sanctions, Troy Zan.
Lift the sanctions off the Survivor press corps.
Free Gordon Holmes.
They're nice guys. They're all nice guys.
I'm also saying this because I'm about to be a part of that,
yeah,
of that
yeah,
group.
You're next. So. You're next.
I know. I'm willing to check back right after this podcast gets posted and see exactly how long it's going to take before I get blocked. I'm assuming 15 seconds.
Mike, we'll keep the faith. We'll keep the faith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, we love Roseanne.
We love Roseanne, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Mike, this is a question from Dave from Ohio has a question for you.
Hey, Rob. This is Dave from Ohio, a.k.a. Matt Frazier on Twitter, calling in. And I have a very important question for you. With Michaela being voted out last night, the last of Millennials versus Gen X, what do you think that Ken and Sir Squiddington have to say about this season? Love to hear your thoughts. Bye.
Well, considering what the purpose of the Sir Squiddington doll was, I'm sure it can also teach you a lot about bodily functions.
Yes. Now, Michaela, have you heard about Sir Squiddington?
Like, go fish.
I mean, technically, he's a squid.
So we're sort of like, you're casting a wide net here, quite literally, Michaela. I thought you were going to put the what sound clip in there. Michaela could actually be perfect to cast in the Sir Squiddington commercial.
Kids, did you hear about the new anatomically correct toy about squid?
What?
That's right. Just go onto the website and order today. And this is where you put the Troyzan clip in.
Click, 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 click.
This man's adding so many dolls to his cart for the holidays.
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
Oh, no, you're incorrect about that.
That's where, like, Sarah would be put in, like, black and white to be like, don't be like this person.
Apparently.
Sir Squiddington is guaranteed to make your kids spin and grin for the holiday season.
Spin and grin.
Okay. All right, Mike, I have a leftovers question for you. So let me
Is this a question about the show Leftovers, or is this just a leftover question from some other week?
These are leftover questions from when Miles Nye was here. So this is a leftovers question. If somebody is super spoiler weary with the leftovers, like they've never seen it before, or at least have not seen season 3 and are planning on watching it, then maybe skip ahead 2-3 minutes here. But let me play you this question from Jessica Frey.
Hi, Rob and Mike. It's Jessica Frey, and I have a question about Queen Aubrey. Since Aubrey in 2 seasons of Survivor has lost all of her Alliance members, is Aubrey the Nora Durst of Survivor? Thank you. Can't wait for the show. Bye.
Is Aubrey cursed, Mike?
Oh my goodness. I mean, and Aubrey does
not only cursed, but also she has a lot of sudden departures around her as well.
I was gonna say not only cursed, but also Durst. We should be checking Aubrey to see if she got any Wu-Tang Clan tattoos before going out to Fiji.
Perhaps that's a possibility.
I mean, Nora does like to bounce on a trampoline, and Aubrey says she does have high highs and low lows as well.
Yes, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, Aubrey's gone through an inordinate period where, I mean, she's even referred to it on her Twitter, where she has basically everyone that she's aligned with, including her previous season. I mean, you had Neil and Joe. Now you had Tony, Malcolm, JT. Now we have Andrea in there as well. It's really, she's really building a pet cemetery.
Yeah. So is Aubrey cursed? Should people not work with her on a future season?
It could be like the beginning of Survivor Heroes versus Villains, where like with James Clement and Stephanie, where James is like, we got to get rid of her. She's clearly cursed. I could totally imagine if Aubrey comes out for a third time, like, nope, I don't want to make friends with you. We're just going to vote you out so you don't have to infect us.
Yeah. But the thing about Aubrey is that it's weird that people like get voted out around her because she is like a triple threat in terms of being a Survivor player, right? I mean,
yeah.
Wouldn't we talk about her as somebody who's really good at challenges, somebody who's very strategic, and also has a solid social game?
Yeah, she could be in that category as well with Amanda and Andrea. Triple A is here to stay. Yeah, and also, I want to give huge kudos to Aubrey for making the finale here. I know her prospects look a little nigh right now, not Miles nigh, but I think that it's really astounding considering she came right off of the Koh Rong finale where really all eyes were on her, not to come into this game where she is a target from the get-go. She has her allies keep voting out and keep getting voted out, as we talked about, but she still makes it to the finale. It's something that's definitely needs to be said in the positive columns towards her game.
So, good job by Aubrey. I want to just play you this also. Jeff Probst was also impressed with Aubrey and thought somebody else might like her also.
It's a Survivor Classic. Last one by Cochran. Set a record, 17 minutes.
A boyfriend.
Aubrey got a little crush. Oh, Aubrey, this could be the beginning of a little Survivor love affair. Break this record, you might win his heart.
Oh boy, yes, Jeff had a giant cockrometer behind him saying, like, this is how Cochran's doing. You're all measuring
that called
up
again?
NSFW. That part, that part. Yeah, it was. I mean, this is not something new. I believe in the hold your weight challenge that they've done in the past. Like before, Brendan and JT broke in token chains. Jeff liked to mention that Rupert was the one to previously hold the record. So, especially in a returning player season, Jeff will sometimes mention previous castaways. But Aubrey absolutely took that bait, and it led to this really interesting dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it very, very interesting, and it spawned some talk on social media. Cochran did do like the emoji with the hearts for eyes, and then Nick Majorano posted a picture of himself photoshopped with like a beat up Cochran and a beat up Malcolm.
Wow, the mayo jar is loose.
Yeah. The mayo jar is very upset about this. So that would be an interesting like story of a couple that met of like, so how did you two get together? Well, we were on different seasons of the show Survivor and we both did a challenge in a very fast time. So then we got together.
Well, it'd be even more awkward from the beginning because Aubrey would say, well, it all started because I saw his season and I actually put in my bio for my season that he was sort of like my father.
Yeah.
Doody, 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 doody.
Consider, if you will, a woman dating her Survivor father.
Okay, well, now things got weird. All right, Mike, are you ready to discuss the truly weird and discuss what the Survivors are saying on social media?
Oh, yeah, we're absolutely entering the winner zone in this regard.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than solving a puzzle by kicking the pieces with your feet. Tweets.
Yes. Yes.
I love Ryan. I love Ryan Elder's lyrics scan so well. And he's such a fast speaker. I love it.
Yes, he does a fantastic job. And I believe that maybe the first one we ever did was about Baylor solving a puzzle with her feet, which is now the second time that's been mentioned on this episode.
It comes full circle.
It always does. So there you go. This is for you, Baylor.
Shut your mouth, homie G.
Okay. All right,
I'm talking
Mike.
To you, Smarty Poo.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you.
Well, I heard
Smarty
it.
Poo.
How'd you know my secret, says Debbie.
Yeah. All right. Stephen Fishback tweeted out, Cochran takes 17 minutes to finish, but it only takes his girlfriend Aubrey 6 minutes to finish? Sounds like the basis of a good relationship. What is Stephen going full bloom on Twitter?
Blocked.
Block. Damn right.
Well, yeah.
Steven also said, well, if the vote steal can ruin Cerise's game, I don't feel quite as bad.
Well, it got very precipitously close. I guess you could say it more so ruined Michaela's game than it did Cerise's, though I guess we'll see what the fallout is.
What?
Yeah. Oh, but Michaela was in pretty good spirits in that video that we saw of her going to Ponderosa.
Oh, she giggled in her final words. Compare that to Andrea, who like breaks down into tears. It's night and day.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe, you know, if you go twice as far in your second time, I think you feel like you're trending in the right direction.
Absolutely. That's why like people like Rupert and Jenna in Survivor All-Stars were like, yeah, I'm happy with third and fourth place. I made it much farther than I did my first time.
Yeah, it's all about perspective. All right. Bryce Isaiah tweeted about everything happening in the episode. He says, it's a lot going on right now.
On brand.
Yes. He talked about Mama Bear made 1,000 Not My Baby Boo at Michaela B. So he was very concerned about that. Those were the two people he was watching out for, was Suri and Michaela. And then he also said, Lord Jesus, save me now. No.
Yeah, those bears got stuffed and mounted on the wall of Sarah's cabin.
Yeah, not good. That was not a good night. Sophie was very concerned about the non-transferable advantage. She says, what is the point of that rule?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it totally makes sense. I think even the show was like, oh, that would have made for an insane TV moment. It led to an insane TV moment as it was, but to have Suri, I mean, she'd be 3 for 3 in these wackadoodle plans. I just think they didn't think that far ahead, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, not great. Candace Cody, she tweeted out, lots of bratitude coming after that immunity win. That was the first I've seen of Brad 1.0 this season. Cool the Jets and back down.
Is it bratitude or braditude?
So she spells it Brad hyphen itude.
Oh, okay. So it isn't bratitude, like she being such a brat.
No.
I believe, oh no, he called her a diva beforehand, Brad with Michaela. But no, it's she really coined the phrase braditude.
Braditude.
Pick somebody else, people.
At hashtag Figgy says, no one needs a Survivor love affair. Heed the words of Figgy, Aubrey and Cochran.
Yeah, she's her own. She's that own Cassandra in terms of the Survivor love affair.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Also, Figgy wants to see an idol get played. She says, please someone play their idol this half of the episode.
Well, remember that Figgy was idol crazy to the point of where Zeke and Jay made a fake one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Figgy loves seeing idols get played. So she'll be the person that would like pom-poms at Advantage Geddon.
Yes, she's ready to go into the front being like, oh, great, there's advantages flying around. I'm going in.
Yeah, she loves it. Jessica Lewis tweeted, OMG, always read the fine print. A lot of survivors tweeted some version of that, but as a lawyer, she knows.
Absolutely, especially if the fine print guarantees salt and vinegar chips for those that also receive the vote steal.
Yeah. Mike, sadly, I don't have any tweets from the real Rupert. I do have some crazy ones from the Rupert bot, who was really, I think is really starting to malfunction as this. He might have gotten hacked by that worm.
You need to work on it. You've worked on Taryn. Taryn's your beta. Now you need to work on your alpha and the Rupert bot.
Yeah. He ended up saying, if Ty and Amber are not playing kissy face, sucky kissy jury vet, they are going to be soon.
Ooh, I wonder what game Sucky Kissy Jury Vet is.
And then Rupert Bot is getting political also.
Oh, God, no. Said,
I'm a hardworking Democrat that truly understands the game misguided government programs and villains can have, like the sure someone and.
Blocked.
Blocked. Yeah, block that right away, Rupert Bot.
Don't talk politics, Rupert. Keep my survivor out of politics, Rupert Bot.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Enough of that, Rupert Bot. So sorry.
Yeah, go back to writing your fan fiction about Ty and Amber.
Yeah. Mike, any thoughts on Ty? Can Ty pull this off? Can he actually win this game?
I don't know if he can pull this off, but again, I also, similarly to Aubrey, I have to give him accolades for making it far as well, considering that he was also a huge presence, making it all the way to the final tribal council. I mean, if he does start playing idols everywhere, I mean, he talked a little bit at the end of this past episode about how he feels like he needs to really impress himself in front of the jury. There was this really interesting jury talk during Andrea's tribal council about, like, what people took from how juries base performance based on the various seasons that we've been in. And it feels like Ty is really looking to, going back to the resume talk, really pad out his resume. But from the story that we're seeing from him, I don't think that can coalesce in a win. I could see him making another finals appearance, which would warrant another Amanda Kimmel comparison, but I don't know if he can have the W.
Wait,
here.
You really, you must be like in a G-chat with Paul Asselson, that you have Amanda Kimmel on the brain.
I'm just getting prompted by him. Okay, this is where you make your Rita reference.
All right, Mike, great job that, you know, I forgive me that I should have plugged all of your stuff at the top of the show. I know that you are podcasting The Leftovers in this final season with Jay and Jack. How do people listen to that?
So if you go to, I was going to say, I'll do all my plugs now, which might actually, if we're going back to the Cochranometer,
plug
might
again.
Be the... Yeah, might beat the number of plugs that he put out. Yeah, so I am podcasting about the last season of The Leftovers with Jay and Jack. You can check that out by just going into The Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike on iTunes. That's been a lot of fun. I'm sure you agree that it's been a stellar final yes. season, and it's been so much fun to cover. We only have 3 episodes left. I have no idea what is going to happen, but that makes me so unbelievably excited.
Yes.
I also cover the 3rd season of Fargo on the Jay and Jack Network with Jeremiah Panhorst. That's been another really, really fun season. I have been doing monthly SNL recaps. I've taken your helm with the SNL post-show recap with Rich Tackenberg. We are doing our season finale podcast with The Rock coming up this weekend. Sadly, Rich's much-beloved Bobby Moynihan is bidding the show adieu, so we'll be sure to show him off in that regard. On the main front with RHAP, I am always doing the RuPaul's Drag Race podcast with Brent Wolgamott and Liana Boris. There is a lot. It's a lot going on with RuPaul's Drag Race this season in a good way, so make sure you check that out. I will hint that there might be someone you know doing something regarding The Bachelorette coming up soon, and I'll leave it at that. Check out my wife Angela's podcast covering Dancing with the Stars. Survivor Historians should be covering Survivor Gabon at some point down the line. I do The Hamster Factor with AJ Mass, where he shows me a movie that I haven't seen. That's been a lot of fun so far. I think I have them all now.
Okay, go check out all of Mike Bloom's links.
Click, 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 click.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Troy Zen. You unblocked me just to click on all my links. That's greatly appreciated.
Mike Bloom, great job. Always a pleasure that I'm looking ahead to this summer reality, and I feel like that we don't have any sort of last comic standings out there on the board to cover.
I know. I was surprised because I know they didn't have it last year because of the Olympics, but you would think that, I don't know, people want Roseanne Barr on their screens and Norm Macdonald so much.
Are you excited that Roseanne is coming back to TV at some point?
Yes, because she was a much beloved judge on our last comic standing coverage that I'm really foaming at the mouth. I'm surprised we made it through the entire podcast without making a Celebrity Apprentice reference.
Yes. I mean, that was very fun, but it's so far in the rearview mirror.
Absolutely. Our thighs are growing with cottage cheese waiting for us to get moving again as Arnold takes the helm.
Mike Bloom, your thighs, all your plugs, they're getting too bloated like a cottage cheese thighs.
Your plugs are like tape around a t-shirt. I just can't wrap my hands around. It's too much.
Who would Arnold be most likely to present a check with Sia style at the finale?
So he'd probably present it to the person who looked the most fit. And unfortunately, I feel like Ozzy in every other season would be able to win this award, but Ozzy purposely put on some weight. So maybe he'd have to go with Brad Culpepper.
Brad Culpepper, I'm very impressed with your physique in this season. You did a great job.
Now take Patrick Schwarzenegger's spot. He's a wussy boy. You're my advisor now.
You're going to be my new right-hand man and work with me.
Now go throw sand at people.
And bring Monica Culpepper also with you.
No.
Pick somebody else, people.
Brad.
In the words of Sandra, anybody but me.
What are you talking about? This is a great opportunity to work with me.
No, you got to go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
You're an athlete. I'm an athlete.
Now lift weights. Watch me. Comment on me.
I love antiquing and I like to decorate.
Why are you
That's
calling
perfect.
Me an antique?
Yeah. I really like your highlighter ass shorts. They're perfect, like when I used to wear Speedo in the marketplace.
I bet you draw so much coverage then, though. I'm surprised you have a girlfriend because you're such a nerdy boy antiquing.
Good times. Celebrity
good
Apprentice.
Times.
No more. I think it's dead.
Yeah, it is dead. It's a little dead and gone.
Yeah. All right, Mike. What's the hashtag today?
Oh boy, we got a few. We've got Jay-Zan. In lieu of our new time travel connection, we've got the Wanner Zone. We've got Around and Frown. We got Roseanne.
I like a round and frown. Roseanne is going to result in a lot of, to use your new naming convention, a lot of relocking.
Yeah, yeah. And a round and frown, I think, you know, we're suggesting something for Probst to use for the future. So I think the more we put that on the Survivor zeitgeist, the better.
Yeah, so, okay, it's a round and frown when you get the... Like, all right, Aubrey, come over here, round and frown. Like, oh, I don't want to give it back. Come on, too
no.
bad. Around and frown, let's go.
I think it's a revolving door. I think the phrases make sense. So I'm glad that we were able to provide some more ammo for Jeff to load his catchphrase cannon.
Okay, load it up. Load up that potato gun and be sure to watch the finale coming up this Wednesday night with the reunion show to see who wins in this draft. Fourth time out, me versus Mike Bloom and friends. So we will see.
I could be the Boston Rob and win on my fourth time. Or the Suri, possibly.
Possibly. We'll see. Mike Bloom, you don't have a chance in this draft.
Arnold, I think that's fine.
Your team is terrible. Sorry. We don't have any opportunities to do terrible Arnold Schwarzenegger impressions anymore.
Once the mayo jar is open in that regard, it's hard to put the cap back on.
Very tough. All right. This week, we got a lot of stuff coming up. We will get back into the Wiggle Room coming up. We'll talk about why Andrea and Michaela lost with David Bloomberg. And then after some news AFing with Tyson and Danny, we will have our coverage of the Survivor Know-It-Alls with Sophie Clark filling in for me. I'll be at the finale on Wednesday night. So Sophie and Steven live after the episode. And then I will have exit interviews for you guys coming up on Thursday. So be on the lookout for that. And then Josh Wiggler, as we do, have one last show to wrap up the season. And we'll take your voicemails and your questions coming up on Thursday. So a lot of stuff coming up on finale week, Mike.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I guess your position on Know-It-Alls is transferable then if Sophie's able to take
it. Yes. She did a great job filling in for me on the Millennials versus Gen X finale. So we'll have her back. So thanks so much to Sophie in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. And she was a lot of fun. And she was a lot of fun at the first live Know-It-Alls as well. So
she's great.
I mean, I want to give you kudos as well, Rob. This has been a really fun season of podcasts to listen to. You've really brought in a lot of really great guests to parse out some of the stuff that might leave us a little confused, but some of the stuff that also brings to light some bright things, some very dark things. It's been a very eventful season. I think you really outdid yourself this season in bringing forward podcasts.
Well, that I appreciate it very much coming from you, because that you have spent 10,000 hours podcasting in just 2017. So you know what you're talking about.
I'm catching up on your 2K there.
You're on my tail. So thank you very much, Mike, and appreciate you coming on. You can follow Mike on Twitter. He is at a Mike Bloom type. Also, we've got plenty of stuff going on in the RHAP Patreon program between all of the patron shows that we're doing, everything that we have coming up in the patron Facebook group and live chats and whatnot. If you want to find out more about that, you don't have to worry about the fine print there. It's all laid out. Rob has a website.com/patron if you are so inclined. Always appreciate it. Rob is a website.com/patron. Looking forward to reading what you have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.